XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
And stop!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 162, XM 207, Sports Zone 999, if you're listening to Sirius XM through the magic of of online, and at our website, stevebick.com. And I think for only, I was thinking about this on the way over from Belmont, I think this is only the third time I've broadcast from Aqueduct. And the funny thing is, it happens to be very easy and convenient, and not getting here is never easy or convenient. But, yeah, in terms of a spot to broadcast from, it's fabulous. I know I did this once when there was some reason we were traveling or something was going on. It may have been similar to today, where we're in the fourth race. But one was a Wood Memorial. I remember for Wood Week, and yeah, that was like two days. I think a Thursday, Friday. So I think maybe this is the fourth time overall. Dave Grenning will remember. Grenning will be here in hour three. Nice afternoon tomorrow. Hope the weather holds. It's sort of been threatening around here nonstop. And I know the last time I checked yesterday, anyway, there was a 60% chance. So, let's hope that doesn't impact, because the Pilgrim and the Turf Classic, I mean, obviously the Vosburgh and the Woodward, are one thing on the main, and whatever will be. They're actually out there grooming right now. It is funny to be here, and you drive by the barns if you come down Conduit Ave, and here's this fabulous facility that, you know, is whose days are numbered ultimately, with Belmont. And first time actually I've been down. I mean, we were here. Came through Long Island last week on the way to Philly to pay respects to Josephine Siaka's dad, who had passed, and so we stopped. We stopped in Hempstead to on the way to Philly, but it was already kind of dark, so I didn't really see that the building, the building having been raised. So I was over at the training track this morning, Shrizando galloping, and looks great. He's going to be back for October 17th. He got off the vets list and all that. But that was the first time that I have had a chance to be at the training track and look across, and to have the building not be there. It's jarring. It's just strange. It's a sight that, for as long as you've been going to the racetrack, to Belmont, to have it, that immense building just be to not be there. So it something new and sparkling and different. Will rise up in its place. Nothing is stopping that. So happy to be down here, and should be a good weekend across the country. And of course, we started the coverage toward tomorrow, this California Crown, which has always been an important weekend of racing at Santa Anita anyway. And now they've wrapped this party atmosphere and you know, the sort of the event concept around it. So we'll check in. We'll check in hourly, actually, about the action in California. Brad Free's going to join us in a little bit. And hour two, check in with Nate Newby, the GM, and we'll get all the last minute elements from Nate, including another push for the betting challenge. Came up with Pete Rotundo the other morning, $6,000 buy-in. Express bet only, though, online for those that want to play online. And then in hour three, we'll check in with Hammer as well. And I know he's handicapped a little. It's the card itself. I mean, forget, you know, those of us that won't be there for for Little Yachty and Shibuzi and the food tastings. It's a good card for the rest of us. So you can have your own food tastings at home. Put up your menu, actually. Put your menu up on your social media, please. I want to know what you're serving at home for the, for the California crowd. A couple of and then, you know, then the usual suspects will be with us. Scully in hour one this morning, and Nick actually in hour two. Nick is in the Ville. In the Ville. Yeah, he's doing some Twin Spires work, and we'll check in with him in hour two. Grenning, as I mentioned here, live, maybe Pat McKenna. We'll see if Pat graces us with a walk down the stairs to the press box. We'll see if we get the chance to say hi to Pat. Dale Day, because, of course, Sunday, we're focused on Saturday, but Sunday, Oklahoma Derby Day. It's not by any means not the end of the meet at all. They're going to go to December. We'll be there for closing weekend and the fabulous Springboard Mile. It's become a what did we agree? What did we agree yesterday about traditions? Does it take three to be? Three to be a tradition, I think this will be the third. I think this will be the third year that we do the Springboard Mile trip on the tail end of Symposium and Los Al and the Santa Anita preview a couple of weeks out. So Dale Day in hour two as well. All right, and on the topic, by the way, of action elsewhere. That we won't dive deeply into. Let me mention at Laurel tomorrow, two fabulously historic races, two and a half. The Laurel Futurity runs tomorrow, as does the Salima. And, you know, one time, they were, you know, they've always maintained, even now, as listed stakes, they're $150,000 purses and they're quality stakes. At one time, they were grade ones and really important two-year-old standards. And two nice fields for the Salima and for the Laurel Futurity. Now, the problem they've got, there's a ton of MTOs, particularly it's a turfy day because the Japan Turf Cup tomorrow as well at Laurel. So they're a little threatened here with the front end of the storm coming up the East Coast. So we'll have to watch on that because it would be it would take away. But there's tons of MTOs in the two-year-old races. If they come off by chance, there's still going to be major fields. There's at least three. I think there's three in the boys' race, and how many in the, let's see. Looks like, was there two? I guess there's two. I thought there was more, but there's only two. Anyway, be advised and keep an eye on the action at Laurel tomorrow. And thank you, Will. Will Schwartz just letting me know I had not seen that. They've already announced they're off the turf tomorrow. Gosh. Ugh. Well, that's too bad. Wow. Not really. All right. We'll see how, we'll see what some of those, there's some New York connections involved in those races, and I wonder if they will, well, the Pilgrim is tomorrow. I don't know. We'll see if they shift toward Keeneland, maybe. We'll see who comes out. Wow. Thank you, Will. Will was involved, actually, was planning to run. Winning Streep, the Oscar performance filly that were ready to go to shop again, daughter. Wow. All right. And he just heard from MJC that they're not going to be on the turf tomorrow. All right. So they got out of heaven. Good for them. That allows for people to plan. And so there isn't, the disappointment. Meanwhile, out in Altoona, Iowa, be advised, you got the big card at Prairie Meadows as they wind down, and it is an absolute stakes glut. Starts with quarter horses, and there's four pretty rich quarter horse stakes, $126,000, $270,000 Iowa bred types, and then the Futurity, $164,000, one maiden race, and then all the standards, including one of the favorites, and I give Prairie Meadows tremendous credit, the Donna Reed. It is so cool to me that there's a race named for Donna Reed, and that it goes every year. But the Sorority and the Oaks and the Breeders' Derby and on and on and on. You got the Cradle. You got a fabulous 13 race card at Prairie Meadows tomorrow as their season draws to a close. And those were the two things, the Laurel and Prairie, that I wanted to make sure people were aware of. Don't want big days to go unmentioned. Well, and of course, I when it came to Laurel, you would think, oh, we were going to hear from Callie. No, Callie's in Callie. She went out. They brought in all the talent from far and wide. All hands on deck for the first organization. Before we start to talk about the weekend with James and with Brad Free this hour, yesterday's carryover, and we'll see about today. But I tell you, you better be on the engine and inside on this main track. I'll tell you that. The turf, turf's fine. Turf, they're coming from all over. But the main track is really giving it up. And, when you go from Sunday to Thursday, I don't know, you just sort of expect, all right, expect a fair racetrack, right? They've had Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday to do whatever with the track. But very chalky the first half of the card, and then it started to get a little squirrely. But you had that stunner, the NJ LNJ Foxwood and actually Church Street Stable partnered up, the Brereton Jones bred Gervin filly that was really strong in that second start. Stunner coming out of Saratoga, one off by six, Flavian Pratt, who had a big day. And then that Athena Beach at between 3 and 4 to 5. Amplitude, Chad Brown came through at 3 to 2 for Klarovich. You had the 5 to 2 winner, Beautiful Thief. And you know, the pick six, the carryover, started with that third race. And Beautiful Thief, I only went too deep in that second leg. And I thought, you know, when Beautiful Thief won the way she did, for George Weaver and Bonaventure Stables with Eric Cancel, I thought, ugh, I should have probably, you know, I had considered singling there. I did get one of the, I tried two singles on the second half of the sequence, and got, well, I got the longest price one home, which was kind of crazy. Sendera in that really muddled maiden claimer, and you know, that was a group. I don't know. I wasn't convinced that Sendera or Nikki Brainburst, you know, were the only ones that could win. So I was nervous about that, you know, that maiden 30. And then Sendera, really confidently handled by Jose Lascano, and wins at 3 to 2. So, I mean, the early pick five paid $28.62. Yeah. And the pick four paid $20.37. Yeah, it was rough. Well, then Moon Age Daydream, and this was one of those horses, 5 to 1, and here's the 6th, 7th, and 8th where it got hard. And it's very funny how the, you know, the first half was very formful and chalky, and then the second half got, you know, got squirrely, and Moon Age Daydream was a horse that it, when I you know, first looked at the sequence, I'm embarrassed to say I put on top, and then I didn't ended up not using her anywhere. I kind of, I don't know, I talked myself into Silver Skillet being really tough, and she went favored, but didn't do a lot of running. I don't know why Joel, you know, had her as far back as he did. What Love Looks Like, and had there been any challenge to Moon Age Daydream, and I think, you know, it I made the decision I did because I thought, well, you know, there is other pace involved here, and instead Moon Age Daydream 25-51-2, 116-2. What Love Looks Like, who would have kept me alive, loomed up and looked like she was going to go on by, and was rebuffed. So here was the first price, $11.80. And then the track kind of played into the sequence, because Phileas Fogg, who was pretty tough to get to, I got to tell you, ends up wiring and winning by 3 at 12 to 1. So that was it. I got to have knocked out a lot of people. Rocket Can. This was a good. You know, this was a good field. A very good field. You know, one other thing that contributed. Well, I mean, I don't know if people. I thought Winnet was not impossible, and he got off to a poor start. Anyway, got us to the nightcap, and I'm in the car and knocked out of everything by Phileas Fogg. But got rescued a little bit. Sassy Alley, who, I don't know why Sassy Alley went off the price she did. 17-20 winner, and this was a good get-out race. Anyway, those of you that hit, and I hope some of you did, there was a nice 240,000-plus bet into it. $22,332, a very nice return. If you got through this, Phileas Fogg obviously was the horse. That was the key. Somehow, if you got to that, Robert Falcone trained Sassy Alley. Pick four paid $1,300. Pick five $3,700. So it the exercise. This is why pick sixes are very much, you know, anticipated, and because you handicap the whole, you know, the whole sequence. And that's the benefit. And you know, even if you get knocked out of your multis, you might find a horse like Sassy Alley. So it was fun. We love the carryover, right? All right, we've carried over and we've carried on. let's get going. And Sally Ellen pitching in too with the notice from Laurel. Thank you, Sally Ellen. And now they're saying, actually, thank you. Saturday and Sunday, no turf this weekend in Anne Arundel. So sorry, it's really too bad. All right, let's see if Scully is. Let's see if Scully's ready for us. And he said he was going out for breakfast, but he expected to be back by about now. So I gave him an extra 5 minutes to get settled in. James, see what James is doing. And we'll probably get, I imagine he's done a little bit more of that Churchill card that we talked about. Thanks again to KK and to Caitlin. As we await James, having just looked down at my phone list, yesterday evening, had nice dinner with Gary and Josephine, King Umberto. And for those of you that have not been to King Umberto's, and of course with no Belmont, you know, those of you that are, you know, typical visitors to the area, you probably haven't gone over to that side. But there, at the same time that Belmont is being redone, King Umberto is redoing the dining room, the main dining room, and then the party room next to it. Not the in the back is still the giant, you know, the new giant catering hall tent building. But they've torn out. It's unbelievable, and they've dug deep. They're gonna put a bakery in like a new basement, and they're gonna completely redo the dining room. So at some point, by the time you get back to Belmont, certainly even before that, you will be greeted by a new dining room at King Umberto's. So anyway, so as I was driving back to Gary's house, we turned on Shearer Boulevard, and that popped in my head that I had not checked in with the Shearer family about how Merrill's doing. So I wrote to John Nichols, and I said, John, have you heard anything, you know, with an update on how Merrill is? And he said, you know what, I haven't. So I wrote to Gary Shearer, and then this morning Gary wrote back. He said, Merrill's terrific. He said he's plugging along, and he said, get him on the show. So next week I will reach out, and we will be regaled by the one and only Merrill Shearer. So, and for those of other of you that haven't, you know, you haven't seen Merrill, you didn't see him down in NOLA this winter, give Merrill a call, send him a text. Send him a funny meme. Anything else? You know Merrill's sense of humor. James Scully is standing by. I didn't want to disturb your breakfast.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. No, just realizing I was at Churchill. I didn't see that. Did I see you? I didn't see you, did I, last week?
Yeah, I saw you.
Where? I can't remember.
We down by the. I saw you 2 weekends ago down by the Winner's Circle for a couple of those steaks. After the one steak, when you were leaving, you said, "Hey, I'll talk to you next week." So,
there you go. Okay. All right. Okay, you got a better. Yeah. You got a clearer head than I do. All
you
right,
left before Jonathan's Ways race, though. Right?
I did.
Yeah. You left like the after the
Pocahontas.
After the Pocahontas, exactly.
Well, because I had. And for several years in a row, I had presented the trophy for the Iroquois, but I asked, as it happens, I asked Tracy, I said, can I do the Pocahontas instead? Because I got to start heading north to Ohio, because we have to get back for Chuck's services,
right,
and everything. And so I wanted to get as far north as possible, so I saved, like, I don't know, an hour and a half, and it actually was worthwhile. I had to watch Jonathan's Way in the car. And yeah, that one resonated. Well, let's, I don't know if you caught any of yesterday's action with KK and Caitlin, but you round out the Churchill, the quick turnaround meet with a nice card tomorrow with the Lucas and the ACK-ACK, and then everything else. I mean, there's so much to choose from, James. Tell us what's on the platform, first of all, at Twin Spires for players, and then let's launch in.
Yes, we have that Breeders' Cup 15% profit boost back. It's at Santa Anita this week. They get 15% profit boost on win, exacta, try, and superfecta winning wagers. We've got another promo for Santa Anita. We got them for Hawthorne, Remington, Harness Tracks, Hoosier, and Fraser. So make sure you go to the offers page at twinspires.com and opt in. And, you know, our handicaps or our tournaments, excuse me, are up and rolling, and had a big one last Saturday and just have lots of contests going on. I think we're getting close to pretty much every racing day and have them for all size budgets. And I think we're going to have an announcement next week about some big upcoming tournament. At least that's the rumors I'm hearing. So, yeah, check out that tournaments tab at twinspires.com as well, and you can see the details and schedule of all the handicap tournaments we got going on.
Well, and one specific, certainly from tomorrow, $1,000 Churchill Downs NHC BCBC qualifier. That's a $600 bankroll, and $400 goes to the prize pool. And this is... let's see how many, let's see what they're anticipating in terms of seating, because, let's see, there we go, 600 bankroll, of course, five races, at least $60 per race at Churchill. They're basing it on just 50 entries, which, you know, is modest. Let's actually, here, let me go to 100. That's much more reasonable. There'll be a choice of actually the first four finishers. If there's 100 entries, first four finishers will get both a BCBC and an NHCC plus cash, $2,500 to the winner, $1,500 to second, $1,000 to third, $500 to fourth. So 100 entries. This is a pretty juicy prize package.
Yeah, very much. Absolutely, and yeah, it's been, you know, and it's hard for me to remember. We just started the tournaments last month, and we're up and rolling, and excited about these the NHC and BCBC, and we'll have some big events as well after those or in the future next spring.
All right. Well, we'll be sure to highlight, and as you mentioned. There's a Saturday Remington, but then there's on Sunday for Oklahoma Derby Day. There's a $100 Oklahoma Derby Challenge, 75 bankroll, 25 goes to the prizes. And you're not kidding, almost on a daily basis, there's a feeder tomorrow, or actually Sunday, tomorrow, there's a feeder at Woodbine for Woodbine action that's going to feed into Keeneland, into the Grade 1 Gamble. Yeah, there's essentially, this is really a third major, I'll tell you, James, this is actually a companion third tournament central along with horse players and horse tourneys.
Yes, yes, and like I said, you know, we're really, you know, also trying to make them available for all different size bankrolls, budgets. So,
yeah, it's a nice array. Absolutely, very impressed. All right, we'll keep an eye on it. Turning our attention to the action. Do you have a kind of a post cotillion Pennsylvania Derby? Any reflections?
Well, I mean, you know, I'll echo what I think most people have said about Torpedo Anna. I mean, really, just all class and heart. And, you know, when she stuck the front and, like, you know, 16th or inside the 16th pole. You know, Brian really wanted to try to save her, but she still had to battle a little bit to pull out the win. And I don't think she was like really striding out like she does, you know, or we've seen her do. And you know, that track, you know, she was deep and she might have been fighting it a little bit. But I definitely think, you know, she didn't show any signs of it, you know, probably in her training or at any time. But she felt that Travers effort a little bit. But she'll have plenty of time now to regroup for the Breeders' Cup. Hopefully she gets, you know, bounces back just like she always does. And, you know, it looks like the distaff is definitely more likely. And but I do think they'll probably pre-enter to both races. And, you know, they'll still leave that classic out there as a possibility for.
We'll see. And how about where's your 3-year-old male evaluation?
Well, he's the gray. You know? I mean, I got to give Lucas credit for skipping the Travers. You know, I bet that was difficult for him to do, but it proved to be the wise move. And, you know, CeCe Gray got away with it. Once again, that's another race that looked like it had all the speed on paper, and it turned out to be very moderate fractions. But I do think he was just going to go as fast as he had to make the lead. And I think he's, you know, that performance is going to, you know, springboard him to the Breeders' Cup Classic. And I think it's going to be Jamie Torres is going to be, hustling as hard as he can from the gate to be showing the way. I think he's got full intents, the connections, and the horse sees a gray of being the pace setter in the Breeders' Cup Classic. And can be, you know, probably be too tall a challenge for him, but he's definitely, I think, adds a pace element to the race by winning that Pennsylvania Derby.
What's your pecking order right now for 3-year-old champ?
Well, I would still go. I think Fierceness and Dornick are best positioned right now going into the Breeders' Cup Classic, and I think that you know, they got a real chance at Horse of the Year. I mean, I think 100% they're both going to be the Horse of the Year if they win the Classic. I do think there's a chance Torpedo Anna, you know, can, if somebody else besides those two win it, then there can be a debate. But, yeah, I think it's between Fierceness and Dornick. I think Dornick's races are a little bit, you know, having won the Belmont, that's perhaps more important and a little bit more than the Travers. But both colts have big Grade 1 wins this year, and they're going to settle it in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
All right.
What do you think? I think Moose can get back in the running. Yeah, I think Moose can get back in the running by winning on Saturday. That would give him the Arkansas Derby and that California Crown, and he's going to the Breeders' Cup Classic if he runs well as a serious contender, you know, if he gets a good number and everything on Saturday. So I think there's three major 3-year-old players based in the U.S. for the race. Obviously, we're going to have City of Troy and Forever Young. Excited to see Forever Young run on Wednesday. That's his final prep for the Breeders' Cup Classic. He's running in Japan on October 2nd, Wednesday. And we'll see how he does. Ushba Tesoro, I saw the stretch run of his race. I thought he looked pretty good running second. But, you know, I definitely think the 3-year-old Forever Young is, you know, he and City of Troy are both serious win contenders internationally.
I want to get your plays because I got to get to Brad Free. But
right.
Andy Serling's got that fascinating suggestion. What happens if Sierra Leone up and wins the classic? What do you do then?
Know.
I mean, how is he not 3-year-old champion?
Listen, that race could be won by an older horse. I look at Sierra Leone, that's an upset in my eyes. I'm not really sort of contemplating that right now.
All right.
But, to me, he's more likely to run second or third than win.
True.
Yeah. So, but yeah, he'd be in the mix for definitely champion 3-year-old. And I don't know, you know.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's fun. All right. Let's dive in. What do you got?
All right, at Churchill Downs, I'm going to mention a couple maidens I'm a little bit intrigued by. First off, it's on Saturday in race number where is that? Hold on a second. Let me just go right to the stakes. I'm sorry, there's one maiden. In the ACAC, obviously Saudi Crown looks like the, you know, I think the real key is whether or not any of these horses can put pressure on them, like, or at least maybe Tumbarumba can put a little pressure on them from the inside. But I do think Cogliostro can stay close, and if he handles the footing, which he's eligible to do, he's eligible to bounce back. And one thing he has going is that his two best races to me were running second to Highland Falls and that Flame, and winning that Hanshin Stakes. I've talked about that performance before. He fell out of the gate in a four-go, Cagliostro did, and he probably wasn't going to beat Milligan, who ran a huge race on the lead that day, but I think he would have been second. And I look for him to bounce back with a good showing in there. It is a tall task against Saudi Crown, but I'm going to give the edge to Cagliostro.
7-2 for Cherie and the new owners with Jose Ortiz.
Yeah, and then in the Lucas Classic, I just think that Cook Creek, I mean, I think he's going really well now. I like that last win at Saratoga on an off track. I think, you know, he's going to get those conditions again. And I think he has really a pace advantage in this race. I think maybe Stiletto Boy is eligible to try to flash forward and put some pressure, show some speed from the inside. But I still think Saez and Cook Creek are going to be showing the way and controlling the action up front. And I like Cook Creek on the front end in the Lucas Classic.
I brought him up yesterday with KK and Caitlin. I agree. I thought he's sneaky in there.
Another's just savvy claim by Mike Maker. And then in the finale, this race has a whole bunch of speed signed on in it. But this number five, General Issue, is coming back from Brian Cook. He's a French bred son of Hard Spun who sold for $3,000 as a yearling. But I actually really liked his effort at Churchill Downs last fall, where he debuted. He ran second from way off the pace to Hard-Headed, who came back and won his next start. And then he'll make his first start since late November, when he ran second in a maiden at Turfway. He's training well. He's got a half-mile bullet work and really strong, you know, Hard-Spun's terrific wet track sire. So I look for General Issue, especially if we see, you know, late, you know, the track playing favorably or, you know, fair or favorably to off the pace types. I give him a shot in the finale, number five in race 11.
General Issue, got it.
And then I'll mention it at Belmont at Aqueduct. I like in the Vosburgh, I really like number two, Scotland, in there. This Mufasa is going to run in the Vosburgh instead of the ACAC. And so hopefully that his presence helps my price. He's the third choice on the morning line. But I really like the fact with Scotland last year, after that curling, I thought he got a little bit exposed, or he did get exposed at two-turn distances and in the Travers and Penn Derby. And I like the way he's come on since cutting back to sprints this year for Belmont. You know, he ran into just like one stakes quality allowance after another at Churchill Downs this spring. But he really started to come on with this runner-up effort to Happy as a Choice, two starts back. Happy as a Choice just won the Louisville Thoroughbred Society over Skelly and closed the game Sugar. And then Scotland, I just thought that was a brilliant performance on July 26th there at Saratoga. That really boded well for him moving forward. It looked like to me he was going right to the four-go off of this. For some reason, he didn't work again, Steve, for like a whole month, and Mont redirected him towards the Vosburgh. But he's trained well since he got back to the tab, and I look for him to run a big race. So I like number two, Scotland, in the Vosburgh tomorrow.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's a good race.
Yeah. And then I'll give a couple picks at Santa Anita, taking a look at that card. I'll start in this Unzip Me, this race five. It's a 6.5 furlong, down the hill for three-year-old fillies. I like this move by Vladimir Lorin and these connections to claim this number seven Antifona. This is a filly that has run well down the hill at Santa Anita. She won the Sweet Life Stakes by 2 lengths earlier this year. Her next two efforts in the China Doll and the Angel Flight were solid. She didn't run well in that Senorita and got some time off. But that was a pretty nice win last time, going a mile. Now she cuts back to the downhill course that she likes, and I think she's going to get a good setup. Mike Smith rides her back. Number 7, Antifona, 10-1 on the morning line, and Unzip Me.
Very good.
And then in Eddie D, I like, you know, number 2, First Piece, is run well at Santa Anita as well. You know, won the Siren Lure this spring. And I like his tactical ability in this spot, especially since you have all this, most of the speed in this field is drawn either in the middle or on the far outside. I think Mike Smith's going to be able to settle in a good spot just off the leaders, and he's going to pounce, you know, when they cross over the dirt. So I like number 2, First Piece in the Eddie D, coming in here off of, or coming back. Also, the other thing I like, Steve, is that last year when he ran in this Kilroy Mile, or earlier this year, he came back with a really bang-up effort in the Daytona on the cutback, and he's following this same pattern for Mark Glatt, where he ran him in the Del Mar Mile, and now he's cutting him back to the 6.5 furlong sprint. So I look for a big effort from First Piece.
I thought First Piece jumped off the page, too.
Yeah, and then I like Moose. I think he's going to get a forward trip. He'll be sitting right on National Treasure, and I like him to improve off of his comebacker and the shared belief. And, you know, then a mile and eighth distance, I think, also is really, I mean, to me, the 10 furlongs in the Breeders' Cup Classic, it might be no issue for him, but it is a little bit of concern. But I look for him to run a big race in furlongs in the California Crown. The other horse I'll mention that I play a multi-race if I want to have somebody else is Substantador. I just really like that effort in the Island. I know he's going back to California and facing tougher horses, but I look for him to run well in that spot off of that last race. So I got to move Substantador in the California Crown.
Very good. All right.
And I think Johans. I like Johans for the Breeders' Cup Mile. I'm saying that this is going to be like 2019, where the Euros don't bring as tough of horses as they do year in and year out. But we saw Uni and Bricks and Mortar. I mean, Americans ran 1-2 in both the mile and the turf in 2019. And I like Johans in this. I just think he's coming into this fall in good shape. I look for him to run a big race. It is a fascinating matchup against Trickery, who I think is the best 3-year-old turf, you know, miler in the country. But, you know, I do think it's Johan's a horse to beat in there. And I got a last-second play at Belmont at Aqueduct. 9-2, number 2, Garuvin in race 3, 9-2 on the morning line. Second off the layoff for Falcone. And I'm going to give him the edge, number 2 in race 3 today at Aqueduct.
9-2. James Scully, everybody. James_Scully, 111. Good luck this weekend, James. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
We'll get after some Keeneland with James next week. Brad Free standing by, and see what Brad's take is on the big California Crown card. Brad, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. And thank you for having me on. I apologize in advance for my voice. I left it at Dodger Stadium last night in the bottom of the seventh inning. So I'll try to muddle through the next few minutes talking about horse racing. A very exciting night last night at Chavez Ravine, though.
Well, and I have not even looked this morning. But another four.
The Dodgers clinched the NL West for, I think, the 11th time in 12 years, and they beat a good team last night. San Diego Padres playing great ball since the All-Star break, and they actually, the Padres came into Los Angeles this week with a chance to control their own destiny and possibly take the division. But after winning the first game, the Padres won the first game, and then the Dodgers came back and won the next two. So very exciting night last night, watching some pro baseball over at in L.A.
And somewhere Ohtani had to have been instrumental, I imagine.
Of course. He has been so much fun to watch. I mean, not only is he an easy guy to root for, he's just brimming with class. He treats everybody with respect and dignity. And when the, you know, when the chips are down, he comes through. And yes, he did. He had another clutch hit last night. And, I think he stole another base. So, in my opinion, he's the MVP of the National League this year. And it'll be fun to watch the Dodgers in the postseason because Ohtani has never played in a postseason game in the U.S. He's stuck down in Anaheim for a number of years with a horrible franchise. But anyway, he's playing for the Dodgers now, and he's had a bang-up year. He, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, very good team, fun to watch, and looking forward to October with the Dodgers.
Well, we got the Red October in South Philly, and a Phil's Dodgers championship series looks inevitable.
It looks that way, doesn't it? And that would be one heck of a series. I hope it plays out that way.
All right. Well, then we'll have to put something out on that together. Meanwhile, there's a big party in Arcadia tomorrow.
You better believe there's a big party. There's all. First of all, there's five stakes races, four graded stakes races Saturday at Santa Anita, and Santa Anita is pulling out all stops to make the first California Crown program, one to remember. They've got some, a lot of special wagers, all stakes pick four, two-day pick fours, two-day pick sixes, musical acts, Lil Yachty, Shaboozy. I've never heard of Shaboozy until Santa Anita announced that he was going to be one of the main acts on Saturday. I started listening to him, and this song, Tipsy, I just can't get out of my head now.
What did I tell you yesterday?
You were right. It's a very catchy song. I don't even drink anymore, but I love the song. It's very, very catchy, and it turns out that Max Muncy, all these Dodger players have walk-up songs. When they come up to the plate, they have a walk-up song, a song that they play over the public address system that, it kind of announces the entrance of this particular player. Max Muncy's new walk-up song is Tipsy by Shaboozy. So I got a huge kick out of that last night listening to Shaboozy at Dodger Stadium. I'll be listening to Shaboozy tomorrow at Santa Anita. Very, very catchy song.
I'm going to have to go look this up, but at some point during the summer when the song emerged, because Tina listens to The Highway, thanks to Eric Hamelbeck for the other day. I couldn't remember the name I think it's Channel 56 here on the network. And so I heard it on the countryside, and then it became a crossover. But he's got interests in racing. And horses. There, he's got some. He showed up either at a sale, or there's some connection he's got to the game. So
I was not aware of that. Yeah, that's interesting.
I've got to go find. I'll ask Tina later what it was. But we thought that at some point she pointed it out to me. She's good for that kind of thing, on the Insta feed. So.
Well, that's pretty cool. And, he's going to be playing really right at home tomorrow afternoon, and Shaboozy will at Santa Anita Park. So should be a lot of fun tomorrow. I'm looking forward more to the races than I am the entertainment. And it looks like a pretty good card that they put together with five, six races. Yeah.
Let's dive in, and probably let's work our way backwards, Brad, to start with, start with the tent, with the City of Hope, and let's go backwards.
Okay, well, we'll start off with a real easy race. Johans has established himself as the top turf miler in California. His all three wins this year have been decisive, highly rated. He has a forwardly placed running style, but not only can he be forwardly placed, but he can also blast home. I mean, that's a tough combination to beat. He's the 4-5 favorite in the City of Hope Mile, Johans is. I expect him to win. I think that the interesting horse is Tricari, a 3-year-old facing older for the first time, and this horse is on his way to becoming something very important for trainer Graham Motion. His win last time out in the Secretariat was dominating. The runner-up did come back and win his next start, so it looked like kind of a breakthrough-type win for Tricari. He got a 2.5 on Thoroughgraph, which is not quite as fast as Johans' last race. Johans got a 1.25. But Tricari, he gets a 4-pound weight break as a 3-year-old, whereas Johans carries 126. and it's a really interesting showdown. I got to give the edge to the local, Johan. He's just been so good, and Tricari has not yet beaten Older, so not even run against Older yet until tomorrow. But it's a good test for Tricari to see if he actually is Breeders' Cup mile caliber, and that's why Grand Motion sent him out here. He liked the 5 weeks between the City of Hope and the Breeders' Cup mile, if it turns out that Tricari is good enough, as opposed to waiting for the Coolmore Turf mile next week at Keeneland, which would only give him 4 weeks. So he shipped out here, Tricari did, and he's taken on a good horse. So two good horses, Johans, Tricari, and, of course, Front Runner conclude. But when all is said and done, I think Johans is going to be pretty tough to beat as the odds-on favorite.
And I see you put conclude in with them, and I found conclude in that Del Mar mile sort of at the last minute a few weeks ago at Del Mar. It was a good effort at 5-1, and certainly the one to catch for Little Red Feather and Sal Goodman's Matticat. Then the feature, the former Awesome Again, and wow, what was it before the Awesome Again, Brad?
It was the Goodwood.
That's right.
Yeah, and then it was the Awesome Again, and now it's the Classic Crown. By any name, it's a 1 1/8 in fall at Santa Anita as a prep, you know, hopefully for some of these toward the Breeders' Cup Classic and or Dirt Mile. And, I mean, Baffert has won this race 8 times. He won it 3 times as the Goodwood, 5 times as the Awesome Again. And I think he's going to win again tomorrow, which is no great revelation. He has 3 of the 6 runners in the field. And it looks to me like National Treasure and Muth are just going to go out there to the lead. I don't think they're going to be going head-to-head and doing any, you know, 45 and change halves. But they're going to, one or the other is going to make the lead. The other one will sit second. And to me, it looks like a parade. There will be one scratch out of there if he's not scratched already. Number 7, Indispensable, is running at Remington Park on Sunday, I believe. So it's a field of 6, and the two Baffert, you know, the principals, I think they control the race. The horse I don't know what to do with is number 1, Newgate. He's coming in off a layoff. He looked super working at Santa Anita last week. And, you know, when Baffert has multiple horses in any race, you always have to look at those, you know, the least preferred by the public. And in this case, I think Baffert is confident that Newgate has trained well enough to take on his two, you know, more accomplished stablemates. And I say more accomplished, I think they're just better horses. But Newgate won the Santa Anita Handicap here in March. So he's coming in off a layoff. I'm not sure if he's cranked all the way, but he's training very well. And Baffert believes he could be a better horse this fall than he was this spring. The question is whether he needs a race or not. But to me, the race goes through National Treasure and Muth, the two front runners in the Classic California Crown.
We didn't get a chance yesterday. Jeff Franklin was under the weather, so we didn't get to do the win using Third Graph segment. But we were going to do the Eddie D and the Crown, Brad. And you are as qualified as crafty when it comes to reading the sheets. And particularly for the Eddie D, I thought it would come into play. And the Eddie D and the Crown, very instrumental in the 2-day wagers, including tying in a pick 2-day pick 4 with Sunday's Sprint and the Zenyatta. So what are we doing in this Eddie D?
Well, trainer Chris Clement shipped a very good turf sprinter out to California named Big Invasion. You know, all he did last time out was win a $150,000 stake by a head, but he has returned to form after three, on paper, they look like kind of poor subpar performances. This is a horse who finished second by a neck in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint last fall, going 5 furlongs at Santa Anita. And then it looked like he needed some starts to kind of get back into the swing of things. He was up against some, you know, kind of compromising circumstances in his first 3 starts of the year. He finished 4th at Gulfstream after breaking slow, did not like the wet track at Churchill, had a bad trip in the Jiper as well. And then he finally got good trips in his last 2 starts and his return to form. His last 2 numbers are 3.5 on sheets. They're not quite as fast, and Thoroughgraph, they're not quite as fast as First Piece, who earned a 3 last time out, finishing behind, they're finishing 4, 6, actually, in the Del Mar Mile. He did not have a good trip, First Piece. he was wide every step of the way, which is why he, one reason why he got the big number for a sixth-place finish. In his previous start, first piece, got a 2.25. That was going a mile on turf at Del Mar. So he routed twice, first piece did. He earned the two best thoroughgraph numbers of his career. Now he's cutting back to a sprint, and we know he was a sprinter before he was a miler. So this is what he really does best, and I think his last two starts would suggest that he's in top form right now, ready to cut back to a sprint. He likes the hill, and he's actually my third preference behind Big Invasion. And I like this old pro, Johnny Padres, who he earned a 4 last time out on thoroughgraph. Not quite as fast as Big Invasion or First Piece, but Johnny Padres ran super both starts this summer at Del Mar, going 5 furlongs, which is too short for Johnny Padres. He wants 6, he wants 6.5, and he's going to get it tomorrow. He's listed at odds of 7-2. I think he's the second choice on the morning line. Johnny Padres, my second preference behind Big Invasion, and I respect First Piece. But there's a bomb in here, and his numbers are not fast enough, but he is a 3-year-old who is getting better, and he's a stakes winner on the hill, and that's Phil D'Amato-trained King of Gosford. Like I said, he's 15-1 on the morning line. He'll be every bit that price because his highest thoroughgraph number is 7.75. That's not fast enough to win this race. Sometimes you got to bet against the number or back a horse who's, on paper, not fast enough yet. But he had a phenomenal workout on the synthetic training track last weekend. We know he likes the hill. We know he likes to sprint. He's in good form. And if he takes a big step forward, as I expect him to, as trainer Phil D'Amato expects him to, I think the King of Gosford has a big shot to outrun his 15-1 morning line. But three top sprinters in this Eddie D, Big Invasion, Johnny Padres, and First Piece with King of Gosford as the potential knockout.
Well, with the Dodger conversation that started the visit, it's hard not to think about Johnny Padres, of course, the great, the hero, the hero of their first elusive championship in 55, Johnny Padres. And, with those kinds of names, it's can't say no, Nick Alexander. Johnny Padres, for those that, I'm not home, I'm downstate, I'm at Aqueduct. But if I was home, I'd be literally, half an hour from where he grew up and where he settled. He was from upstate by Glens Falls, the little tiny town north of Glens Falls, and lived out his life in Glens Falls, as it happens.
That's very interesting. Johnny Padres, he's a 7-year-old gelding. He was actually bred and owned early in his career by Nick Alexander. He was claimed a couple years ago for $40,000. And he's turned out to be a very solid, hard-knocking turf sprinter here in California, Johnny Padres is. And, you're right. The name, actually, it would be an appropriate upset winner of the California Crown as we enter the postseason.
Well, and I'm just noticing it was made 7-2. I mean, he's not going to go favored.
No, I think the Big Invasion will probably go favored. I think First Piece is going to also get a lot of action based on his numbers and
absolutely
established form down the hill. But I think Big Invasion, when all is said and done, who's the 3-1 favorite? So he's a high odds favorite.
Yeah.
If you like it, you're going to get paid if he wins. I think he's the class of the field, and that Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint runner up from last year, going 5/8, kind of to me makes him the the quote class of the field, but. This is not a layup for Big Invasion. He's facing some very good locals who have something that Big Invasion does not, and that is established form down the hill.
The John Henry, the grade 2, and a 1.25 course, and a 3-turner, and starts on the downhill course and meets up with the main track. And this is an interesting gathering, actually. You want to talk about some grizzled veterans. How about the likes of Gold Phoenix and Rock Emperor, Dicey Moshera, Masterpiece, some real hard hitters involved here. Balnikov, who is young by this field standards at 5. You've got an interesting move by Will Walden, bringing Big Blue Line from Saratoga, the good performance. First start after he moved to Will, and now returns to the grass. This is, in some ways, maybe the most interesting race of the day.
Yeah, it's an interesting race. To me, the Eddie Gee is the most interesting race of the day. But this race, you're right, it is interesting. And one of the things that makes it interesting is that there is absolutely no speed in the field. I'm not sure who's going to make the lead. I suspect it might be number one, Cabo Spirit, who is listed at 30-1 on the morning line. And I'm going to be betting him at that price because I think he's quick enough to make the lead if they choose to do that strategy. And I don't see any reason why they wouldn't, because when you look through this field of 11 veterans, there's not a single front runner in the entire field. Cabo Spirit is stretching out from a 1:16 allowance. And then before that, he was pressing a 45-109-3 in the restricted wicker stakes. So we know he's quick enough to make the lead if he wants. George Papapodromo, who trains Cabo Spirit, won this race last year with a horse named Balladeer, who was not good enough on paper, but he jumped out to the lead and wired the field and paid $15. So this would not be the first time Papapodromo sprang an upset in the John Henry. It's a weird, bizarre race because it's very difficult to, you know, say with any certainty how it's going to unfold. I suspect Cabo Spirit's the horse to catch. Now, I'm not completely sold on that. I am sold on the price because on numbers, he is right there in the ballpark with the entire field. So it's an interesting race. Gold Phoenix lost this race the last 2 years after winning the Del Mar Handicap in his previous start. He comes in with the same pattern. He's back in form right now, Gold Phoenix is. He has run well and won over the Santa Anita Turf Course. In fact, he won a grade one here in March of 2023. He's the horse to beat. He's the now horse, the class of the field. But he's going to have to overcome a slow pace, which he did last time out. I give him credit. We'll just have to see. He's my top selection, by the way, Gold Phoenix is. But I have a hard time backing him as the favorite in a race that just is very, very murky from a pace scenario. As for Big Blue Lion, if he can run as fast on grass as he did in his last two starts on dirt, he could be right there as well. Yep. But he also is a come-from-behinder in a race that, you know, it's likely to unfold at a very, very slow tempo. It's an interesting, interesting race, no matter who you like. I picked Gold Phoenix. I'll be betting on my second preference, Cabo Spirit, just on the potential pace angle. I don't think he's going to be 30-1, but I'll settle for half that on Cabo Spirit.
Well, and I'm absolutely at least using Big Blue Line 20-1. And if you're looking for somebody that does have some tactical foot, I mean, a dirt horse is instinctively going to be, you know, quote unquote, faster,
right,
than turf horses, and he's got races, you know, on his resume where he's attended fast paces, and I thought that this is a very clever move by Will Walden, and Luan Machado is going to come out there, and he can be aggressive. I'm very interested in Big Blue Line at 20-1.
Yeah, no, that's a very interesting, you know, horse to take a look at. He was one of the two horses that I thought had a chance to make the front. I settled on Cabo Spirit as a potential pace setter, but I got a big S on the past performances of Big Blue Line. S stands for speed in my basic fundamental elementary abbreviation system. Big Blue Line, he should be formally placed. And it might, you know, who knows, maybe just the best horse wins, and I think the best horse is Gold Phoenix. But, again, it's a very difficult race to kind of interpret on the pace angle. Cabo Spirit and Big Blue Line, 30-20-1, respectively. A couple of good bombs to look at in the John Henry.
Then there's the Unzip Me, and these are the three-year-old fillies coming down the hill. This is a bulky field, too, and I haven't checked the price, but I've got an idea that I hope works. What's your lean?
This is a fun race. It's three-year-old fillies coming down the hill, and it's a big field, and trainer Graham Roche Motion sent Tupi out here to California. She's listed as the 5-2 favorite on the morning line. Her last start was disappointing, but the race set up all wrong for her. It was in the Coronation Cup at Saratoga in July, and she was down on the inside. She had to kind of gun for the lead. She took back, she pressed, and then she just kind of ran out of gas. It was not the type of trip that Graham Motion envisioned. But from the rail, her jockey really had no option but to kind of go on with it. Now she's drawn outside in post 11. I think she's going to be moving in a couple notches because there are scratches in this field. But she has Flavian Pratt. She's going to get a pressing trip, and she's very, very good. And she's the 5-2 favorite on the morning line. The horse that I picked on top is shortening up from a mile and 1/8 to 6.5, and that's Zona Verde, who finished third in the Grade 1 Del Mar Oaks last time out, second in the Grade 2 San Clemente the time before that. And, you know, she has sprinted with success in the past, Zona Verde has. She worked 46-2 last weekend, fastest work of the day, fastest half-mile work on the training track, the synthetic training track. She's on her toes, Zona Verde is, and ready to cut back from 9 furlongs to 6.5. I think she can mow them down late, but I have nothing but respect for Tupi, who would be a must-use. And then the interesting horse in the race, or among several interesting horses, is number one, Dreamfire, who we haven't seen since she led to deep stretch in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf last year at Santa Anita. She was 39-1, even after winning her first three starts. And she gave, you know, long-shot bettors a thrill until deep stretch. She just wasn't quite good enough. She's coming back for trainer O.J. Haregi, and the reason her comeback has been delayed for so long, she hadn't started since last November, she had recurring foot issues, and finally Haregi just had to stop on her completely, but she's overcome those the foot ailments, and she's training very well for her comeback. She possibly could be the speed of the field. She's down on the inside, so Hector Berrios is going to have to let her rip out of there. She's a front runner by nature anyway. If she's ready to fire, first start off the bench, you know, she could take this field a long way. But when all is said and done, I like the two, you know, quote, now fillies, Tupi and Zona Verde. And I prefer Zona Verde, who's lifted. I don't think she's quite going to go off at 9-2. She's going to get bet down a little bit off those graded stakes placings. But I like Zona Verde over Tupi, and I respect Dreamfire in a really interesting race for three-year-old sprint fillies.
Well, you talk about a cutback. I'm going to give you a cutback too, Brad, at a big number. Omaha Girl, it has gone forward for George Papa Padromo, and Abel Cedillo rides back out of the allowance win downstate at Del Mar. I love these. Hammer taught me years ago. I remember you and I talking, and the hill used to confound me until Hammer got me on turnbacks. And at 20-1, I'm very excited about Omaha Girl.
Well, you'll get that price because, you know, on numbers, she's not fast enough, but she's cutting back from a mile and 16th to 6.5. You know, that's the great thing about the downhill turf course, and I wish that they would use it more often. It brings together two separate divisions, and I'm not sure that either one has the advantage. It brings together, you know, turf milers, long-distance turf horses, and sprinters, and they converge going 6.5. And, you know, sprinters can wire this field down the hill, and turnbacks can rally from last and win this type of race as well. So I love the hill. It's an iconic layout in California. Actually, it's iconic worldwide, if you ask me. But that's an interesting horse to gamble on, Omaha Girl. In my opinion, Steve, she's not fast enough, but she's going to be finishing coming back, you know, shortening up from a mile and 16th.
Brad, before we wrap, mention the two-day bets and the Santa Anita Sprint Championship and the Zenyatta on Sunday. And the Zenyatta and actually the whole distaff division took a little hit with Adair Manners. I won't call it abrupt because she hadn't, there were rumors she hadn't worked in a month. And her retirement, I won't say opens things up. There's a matter of a filly in the East Coast named Torpedo Anna that that steps in right to the fore as the, you know, I thought Adair Manor would have been a problem for Torpedo Anna. But in the meantime, the rest of the fillies that'll line up on Sunday, this opens things up for them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let's not forget about Idiomatic also. I mean, I know that she hasn't won as many races this year as she has did last year, but she's pretty good too.
Yeah.
Torpedo Anna and Idiomatic, to me, are the two standout favorites in the distaff division. The absence of Adair Manor, you would think that, you know, with Adair Manor dropping out, that maybe the Zenyatta would have a bigger field. But one of the problems in California is there's a whole series of conflicting stakes races. They had the Hirsch, the Tranquility Lake, the Dark Mirage, and now the Zenyatta, all filly mare dirt route stakes, it within like a 30-day period, and that's why we're left with only a field of six despite the absence of Adair Manor. And I think that the Clement Hirsch third-place finish or flying connection must be considered the horse to beat in the Zenyatta on Sunday. She actually ran very well. Adair Manor beat her by nearly five lengths. But Flying Connection, she got stopped turning for home. She wasn't going to finish any higher than third anyway, but she could have made it a lot closer. She got stopped as she ran straight into a traffic jam at the 3/16, got stopped, angled out, and then she held off Desert Dawn the length of the lane to run a better-than-look third. Flying Connection is a seven-time winner. She's grade one placed, and I think that she's just the best filly in this field, and I expect her to go favored. They're an interesting, I don't know what price Alphabella is going to be, and she's also switching surfaces, but Alphabella tossed in a clunker last time out on a good turf course at Saratoga. They sent her out to California to train her John Sadler, and she's trained exceptionally well over the main track at Santa Anita, which this fall has been extremely slow and deep in the mornings. Alphabella is training like she's kind of got a new lease on life since coming out to California, and she's kind of the X factor. We don't know if she's as good on dirt as she is on grass, but her workouts suggest that she actually fits in this race. Flying Connection to me is going to be my top choice. Alphabella will be the second choice, and then I have a soft spot in my heart for Desert Dawn. I think she's the richest Arizona bred of all time. She's a million-dollar winner, a daughter of Cupid. I don't think she's quite as good this year at age five as she was early in her career at three and four, but she'll be running late. Like Flying Connection and Alphabella in the Zenyatta. And, with Adair Manor out of the Zenyatta, the Santa Anita Sprint Championship also, there were a couple horses that we half expected to see in the entries. Neither Speedboat Beach nor Dr. Binkman entered the Santa Anita Sprint. Dr. Binkman is going to be training into the Breeders' Cup. Not sure which race that is, the Dirt Mile or the Sprint. And I don't know what Speedboat Beach's status is, but it's kind of a messy race. The favorite, the best horse in the race is number one, Fort Bragg, a graded stakes winner who ran a 0.5 on Thoroughgraph, 2 and 3 starts back, but he hasn't been out since December 26th. He looks like he's training well. He's buried on the rail for a comeback race that is a prep, in theory, for the Breeders' Cup. I'm not sure I'd want to take him at a short price. I took a horse that won beat a soft field in an allowance race in his comeback, and that's number 7 for All Mankind. And he had everything his own way that day. I mean, he went fast early, 21-3, 44-3, ran him off their feet, but it was the way he did it. And he's drawn outside on Sunday for All Mankind is. And that's key because there are two very quick horses right to his inside, Straight No Chaser and Neiman. I think that for All Mankind might be a good horse. We're going to find out tomorrow. If he's not, we'll see him next in the two other than. But for All Mankind is my very tepid top selection in this race. Straight No Chaser ran one of the fastest sprint races of 2023. But then his comeback this spring at Aqueduct, he broke slowly, rushed, and finished fourth. He was expected to run in the Bing Crosby. Something came up. He did not enter. And this is his comeback race, his first start since May. Straight No Chaser is a fast horse. He's a good horse when he's on his game. I'm just not sure how he's doing coming into this race. Johnny Velasquez is out to ride him. Velasquez also rides Newgate in the California Crown. But it's not much of a field, to be quite honest. We're going to find out how good For All Mankind is and whether or not Fort Bragg needs a race. And if Straight No Chaser can be as good as he was a year ago.
Brad Free, everybody. And I will mention, Brad, that the good news about Speedboat Beach is he is working along. And, in fact, last Saturday, worked a sharp 1:12 and 1 minute and 12 seconds and 1/5. So he at least is working. So maybe he's going to train up as well, right? He hasn't been seen since Malibu.
He'll be coming in off of an awfully long layoff. So I don't know. I mean, that's why I was surprised to not see him in the entries for this race. Baffert's waiting for an allowance race to fill. he's going to be waiting a long time. Alice races, they're borderline to go half the time out here in California. But it would have been a better race with Speedboat Beach in it. He's not. And, you know, we'll find out down the road. Maybe there is a race in the book.
Well, he got beat ahead last year by Dr. Chevel. As it happens. Brad, outstanding. Enjoy. And we want at least a little video clip of Shibuzi. And you know, maybe a selfie with you know, with little Yachty. Little Yachty, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everybody at the bar getting tipsy. There you go.
Look at you. The earworm worked. It worked on Brad Free. Thanks, Brad.
Sounds good. I'll talk to you soon, Steve. Bye bye.
You got it, Brad Free, folks. Looking forward to getting out to Del Mar for Breeders' Cup. And I should mention, we didn't talk about the sixth race on Saturday, but Brad, and in fact, it seems like a universal best bet is Doug O'Neill with Going Deep. And Nate Newby's going to join us here shortly, and we'll talk more about all these options because there is no shortage of wagering special events. And I invoked crafty Jeff Franklin, and no sooner did I do that did he pop up. He said he's feeling a little better and they're still trying to figure out what's going on with him. He likes that King of Gosford that Brad mentioned as a price consideration in the Eddie D. 15-1, and Nate Newby is standing by. He's going to preside over everything tomorrow. Nate, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. I promised hourly updates on California Crown Day, and we started with Brad, and here you are. We'll talk to Hammer in a little bit. Pete Rotundo joined us earlier in the week and laid out the wager ideas. I also wanted to draw attention to what looks like a major betting challenge, and that's one of the things you've been associated for a long time with the contest play out there.
Yeah, I love the contest. It should be a big day on Saturday all around. But on the contest side, the California Crown Betting Championship, we upped it this year to 6,000. So 5,000 is your bankroll, and 1,000 goes into the prize pool. It looks like probably at least 150 entries, so 150,000 in prizes. And that includes BCBC entries, NHC entries, and cash prizes as well. So it's going to be a big event.
Well,
and this is World Cup Betting Championship prizes, so all kinds of prizes.
Exactly, and you know, if this takes root, and I expect, you know, there's no reason to think it won't. Pegasus has worked its way into a prominent winter role, and this positioning on the calendar, and you know, the traditional Santa Anita based Breeders' Cup prep calendar kind of feeds into it really nicely. So this has real potential to become, you know, kind of a major, kind of a fall major, the way Pegasus has become a winter major.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly the theory. Is you know, Pegasus started off as a good event, and now it's, you know, handles well over $40 million, gets some of the best entertainment, food. It's an event people really a destination event now that people focus on, and so we want to have that at Santa Anita. I think, you know, with us hosting Breeders' Cup 11 times, it's probably, you know, that's taken the place as our big event plus opening day. But now, you know, looking at the autumn meet this time in the calendar, like, it's a great time to build a new big event.
Speaking of big, David Grenning of America's Turf Authority has arrived in the press box here, the historic press box of Aqueduct. Nate, talk about the, I got to announce the Dave's arrival. The slate itself, I mean, you've had a couple of horses. In fact, Brad Free just kind of laid out a few of the horses that were kind of hopefuls to make these races, but he ended up with a nice slate. Talk a little bit about the challenge. Brad, I thought, really framed it correctly about there's just a lot. There's not enough horses to some degree for all of the stake opportunities.
Yeah, obviously that's a problem you see around the country. So I thought with five stakes on Saturday, the card came up pretty solid. And, some really deep races, some races I think horse players that are going to have to look at going pretty deep on maybe using an all. Brad's preview was really solid, I thought. But, even the California Crown, the big race on the dirt, got seven in there. It may come down to a six, but, there's a... It's very competitive. I think a lot of people will go five deep on that race, and then if you leave out one, what happens. So it'll be interesting. I think overall a very solid card considering the way stakes are going around the country, and obviously it's a competitive time of year as everybody's looking for the final prep before Breeders' Cup and New York and Kentucky and Florida. So.
Let's take a minute and talk about the new wagers, because without planning, people are may miss an opportunity, especially if you're already prepared to look ahead to Sunday, because there's three different sets of 2-day wagers, including 2-day doubles, a 2-day which are $5 increment. Then there's the $2 two-day pick four, which you talked about pretty extensively with Peter, because the Eddie D and the Crown with the Sprint and the Zenyatta, the very, very set, compact set of four, that's a $2 wager. There's the $1 two-day pick six, and then there's Saturday standalones, the $1 all stakes pick five, all five stakes on the card, and then a $2 all turf pick four, which I think a lot of people will be drawn to.
Yeah, no, the idea is pretty simple. We just wanted to give people as many options, very player-friendly options as we could give them. So it's a busy betting menu, but that seems to be kind of the trend on big days now, and if you pay attention, I think you can find really good opportunities. All the new wagers are 15%, including the 2-day. But some of them with little higher increments, really try and give horse players a chance to make a nice score. So, and then we also introduced some regular everyday new bets for the autumn meet, which will go every day. And that's a, $5 late double at 15% and a $3 late pick three at 15%. So, plus the coast to coast, we're now taking, with Sanity and Gulfstream, we're expanding that. So that, used to be just focused on, our classic meet and Gulfstream's championship meet. And now that's expanding. We're going to run that every day that Sanity and Gulfstream are running. So that'll be a consistent year round bet, when we're both up and running. And that's always very player friendly with a 15% takeout at a dollar increment.
Should also mention, Hammer talked about it a couple of weeks ago, but the return of the $2 pick six.
Yeah, so the pick six, we went back and forth. Obviously, the jackpot, a couple years ago, which, some people like, some people don't. The interesting thing about the jackpot and what we've tried to, adjust now with the $1 and now the $2 is that just trying to, with purses in California being solely funded by parimutuel handle, you got to really watch what pools drop. And, trying to compare to the jackpot, the pool was actually higher than our $1 version. So we're going to try the $2, and that'll bring back some carryovers. One thing that I really love about it is that there's not, on a carryover day in Southern California, it seems to bring a lot of extra energy and focus on our cards. So having more of those at $2, I think, there's players that really feel like that's the right format where you can have a strong opinion and make a giant score. So we'll try that, and we'll keep horse players can vote with their dollars. So we'll watch it, and then we'll see what we can do.
And of course, the racing office, Hammer's talked about this over the years many times about how the racing office is cognizant of the betting menu and tries to position races in terms of field size that enhances the attractiveness of the you know, of the wager opportunity.
For sure. And I think, you know, so, you know, with our last pick six being on the last six races, I always try and put competitive races there. But also because of the competition, you know, especially where ADW, so much of the handle is through ADW now, towards the late in the day is when we have the least amount of competition and we really get the national focus. So those are the, we try and put our best races when they can take the spotlight and you see a pretty good jump up, as the East Coast tracks wind down, and people focus solely on their card.
Well, and you prompted, I'm glad that you mentioned the timing and the attractiveness. I got an email this morning overnight from the HKJC, basically the mutual department. I see that the four stakes, and I'm going to assume it's races 7, 8, 9, 10, have been added to the World Pool tomorrow.
Yeah, so we're really excited about that. It's the first time, I think, Stan Anita, we've done a couple yes. races for Breeders' Cup here and there, but the first time Stan Anita is working with the Hong Kong Jockey Club, and they're going to take our last four races, like you said, simulcast in Hong Kong. So we'll be really good for handle, obviously. Stakes races out to an international market. We're really excited about that, and hopefully something we can build on. It's been great to work with the folks at Hong Kong Jockey Club, and we'll see if this can be a building block to more.
Well, I know that Alan Kwong and some other executives had a summer, really an extensive summer tour, meeting with major racetrack organizations, and this is an opportunity. I mean, Japan is a tough market. They only import, I think, it used to be 10 races from around the world. I think it's increased a little bit. But the World Pool concept is going to get more and more attention as it expands. And so I'm excited to hear that you guys are excited. Do you have is there a target number that you have in mind that you think would be a good jumping off point?
I don't know. I think we're that far along yet. I think, them taking four of our races, that's more than they've taken on some Breeders' Cup cards. So
yeah.
We thought that was a great start. I mean, the timing is a little tough. It'll be early morning wagers for them. So I think I'm sure they'll see how these four races do and make some plans. But we're obviously very open to it and trying to do everything we can to build even more.
Well, my first awareness of the international marketplace and Australasia came when I lived in Montreal, and the Hollywood, back when Hollywood would have the late night Friday night action, and we'd be wrapping up, at like 11:30 midnight, and that was when the Asian horse players came strolling in to the Hippo Club for the overnight shift, Nate, and I was like, what are these guys going to be betting on? And all of a sudden, here's Australasia Racing coming on at midnight. I was like, wow, this is cool. And it was something I was, really not aware of. This was in the 90s. And that was my first impression. So I don't think you have to worry about them staying up and and taking an interest, because it is a voracious appetite.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's even funny, some of our big players will come over to Eddie Logan and after the races, we'll be watching a game or something and look up, and then they're playing Japanese racing, Australia racing, then horse players will find a way. So it's
Yes, like in Jurassic Park, the nature finds a way and horse players find a way.
Absolutely.
Any last minute, any ticket advisory, anything that those that are coming to Arcadia, there might be people coming for the first time, anything they need to know tomorrow?
No, first race is 12:30. There, the general admission ticket's 25, but you can get discounts by 50% off by signing up for First Rewards, which is free.
Wow.
And the GA area some of the premium areas, obviously near the concert, those are sold out, but there are some other options. But the general admission, we have a thing, this is the first time we're doing it, called Exacta Eats, and many of the really nice restaurants that are our partners for the premium areas are doing pop-ups in the Exacta Eats area. So you could go to the General Mission area. We got picnic tables set up on the apron and have some of the best food from top chefs in L.A. and watch the races from the apron for, you know, $15. So it's there's some good options still. And then there's also plenty of tickets in other areas you can look at, too. So all kinds of options. I would say first race at 12:30. The music, you know, Shibuzi is going to go mid-card, probably after the eighth race, it looks like. So there'll be entertainment between races and then about 2 hours of music after the last race. So you can kind of plan your day depending on whether you want to do an all-day racing with some night concert or pick off some of each. So it'll be a fun day, lots of entertainment. You will not be bored if you come to the track. I can guarantee that.
Well, no doubt. It looks spectacular. I said to Brad last night, we were getting ready to, you know, we were planning for his visit, and I said, kind of sorry, you know, I didn't plan to, you know, to come out. But what's amazing about that, actually, Nate, is that I wouldn't come out for the Goodwood or Awesome again. I mean, there's, you know, these big Breeders' Cup weekend preps around the country between Churchill and, of course, Keeneland starts next week and here in New York. And but this puts a little bit of a different spin on it. I applaud everybody involved. I think it's going to be a big hit.
Yeah, thanks. No, we're excited about it, and I think this year will be good, and year two and three will be even bigger, similar to how we built up Pegasus.
Nate Newby, everybody. You can follow Nate and Newby on your Twitter. And Nate, we'll get the contest players out, and it should be a spectacular day. We'll be watching and wagering, and we'll see you at Del Mar, actually.
Sounds great. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
Not at all. Nate Newby, everybody, essentially general manager, and has over the years, you know, built a resume of experience in multiple departments, and understands the players, understands the racing side, understands the executive suite side. One of the best liked and appreciated track execs around, Nate Newby. Come to the midpoint on this Friday morning from the Dave Grenning press box at Aqueduct for at least another 18 months, or give or take, or. Dave's going to join us in hour three. And Dave, what I was speculating early, how many times have I broadcast from here? Three? It's under five. I think under five. I'll take the under as well. I think that's right. But I like it here. I'm going to come more. Hey? What? They're high up. I you're not going to get me to swing out there on the parapet or in fact, Tina, where were we? Tina and I were somewhere, and the window washers were descending in those window washer. I don't know, what do you even call it? The window washer contraption. Yeah, and she was like, oh my God, we were on like. We were on like the 32nd floor somewhere, and here it's like a Mission Impossible movie, like a scene. Exactly. Comes swinging, like running across the windows, like he does in the Dubai. There are certain things that Tina is Beth the same way. There's certain things if she's scrolling for something to watch, there's certain movies that she stops and watches no matter what. She's not like that. Tina is. The Mission Impossible movie? She'll stop. Yeah. And those horrible, those idiotic Fast and Furious movies she likes. And every time they come on, I say to her, which one is this? Which one is this? And she seems to know. I couldn't differentiate a single one of those, I mean, there's 10 now. It seems like it's the same movie over and over again. As is Mission Impossible. That's right. We're taking a break. I think timing's good for this break. When we come back, Dale Day. We'll go to Remington Park. Then Nick Tamaro, Hammer, and David Grenning. Stay with us. Second half after this.